أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. We seek the protection of God from Shaitan, who has been expelled from God's kingdom of special mercy. We need to be aware of the reason for his expulsion, because these are the same characteristics whereby he would try to influence us. Number one was his arrogance. He knew what was wrong, and he defiantly committed the evil. And he knew what was right, yet he refused to accept. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. We seek the help and guidance from God for three reasons. We believe he is Allah, the absolute perfect being, the only source for all perfection. And therefore, any goodness or any guidance that we seek to achieve necessarily must originate from him and him alone. And secondly, we turn to him for help because we believe he is Rahman. Each one of us is a manifestation of the grace and the love and the rahmah and the mercy of God, whereby we come to life, whereby we survive and we thrive and develop towards our perfection. And thirdly, we turn to him for help because we believe he is Rahim. His abundant love and mercy and grace is available to those amongst us who believe in him and who submit to his will and who shape and model their lives according to his dictates. Wa salatu wa salamu ala sayyidina wa nabiyyina Muhammad wa alihi at-tahirin. And we send our salutations and greetings on the Holy Prophet of Islam, that human being who we believe managed to reach the highest pinnacle of perfection possible for any human being. And this is for two reasons. Number one, his understanding of who God is, of God's infinite perfection, of God's perfect attributes, of how God moment by moment has got total control over everything, and by his wisdom and love he is driving the universe towards its final goal and purpose of perfection. His understanding of this reality was the maximum possible for any human being. And secondly, this understanding translated itself into action, whereby his thoughts, his feelings, his actions, in his public life, economic, political, social, family spheres, in all aspects, he was the most humble and submissive to the will of God, and therefore the most perfect. And secondly, we send our salutations and greetings on his holy progeny, who were the next best in perfection, and especially so on our third holy Imam, whose event we have congregated to commemorate, whose supreme example of sacrifice in the way of God has then become a role model and a source of inspiration for all future movements of resistance against injustice and of efforts to establish justice, up until, of course, the final establishment of global justice when the godly values will come to rule over the earth. Respected scholars, elders, and brothers and sisters in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. As we congregate to commemorate and to mourn and to weep on the tragedy of Karbala, traditionally on this night we commemorate the memory of Aun bin Abdullah bin Ja'far bin Abi Talib and Muhammad bin Abdullah bin Ja'far bin Abi Talib. It wouldn't be surprising if the Prophet were to be alive that he would also have grieved and mourned for this tragedy. In Sahih Bukhari, in the section on the battles of the Prophet, there's a report that when Ja'far participated in the battle of Muta, in the 8th year of Hijrah, even before they died on the battlefield and the news came back to Medina, the Prophet informed his companions. Anas bin Malik is reported to have said, إِنَّ النَّبِيَّ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَآلِهِ نَعَى زَيْدِ بْنَ حَارِثَ وَجَعْفَرِ بْنِ أَبِي طَالِبِ وَعَبْدَ اللَّهِ بِنَ رَوَاحَ لِلنَّاسِ قَبْلَ أَنْ يَأْتِيهِمْ خَبَرُهُمْ وَأَيْنَاهُ تَذْرِفَانَ. He was crying and he was informing the companions that three commanders had been sent to the battlefield in Muta. Zayd bin Haritha, when he was killed, he transferred the flag and the standard of the Muslims to Ja'far ibn Abi Talib. And when he died, he transferred it to Abdullah bin Rawaha. And the Prophet grieved and cried. Why? The cause of the battle was righteous. These individuals were dedicated and devoted to Allah and ready to sacrifice themselves for the sake of upholding the cause of Allah. And therefore, they deserve the compassion which the Prophet expressed for them. I would like to use this opportunity to introduce a contrast in the viewpoints between that of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and the other prominent companions and elders in the Muslim world contemporaneous to Imam alayhi salam. Notice the demand for the bay'ah that came from Sham. خذ الحسين بالبيعة أخذا شديدا لا رخصة فيها. This is a non-negotiable demand. He must surrender in allegiance, otherwise he should be executed. And this demand was also made not only of Imam Hussein, but also of Abdullah bin Zubair and also of Abdullah bin Umar. These are some of the illustrious, famous people at that time. And if you study their responses, we could categorize them into three types. One is that represented by Abdullah bin Umar ibn al-Khattab. Abdullah came to Mecca when Imam Hussein had already migrated there. And he offered his advice. He said, I don't think so it is advisable for you to undertake this uprising and opposition to Yazid. First of all, Yazid is powerful. Secondly, he is rich. He's bought people. He's got the majority against you. And thirdly, he belongs to a family who has got an old hatred against you. There is no way you can survive against him. The second type of advice was represented by Abdullah bin Zubair. Also came to Mecca, took refuge there. However, in his opposition to Yazid, Abdullah bin Zubair unfortunately had his own independent ideas whereby he wanted to become a leader independent of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And the third type of advice at that time was represented by Abdullah bin Abbas, Abdullah bin Ja'far, Jabir bin Abdullah Ansari, Sa'ad bin Malik, who's known as Abu Sa'id al-Khudri, these other well-wishers who did not oppose Imam's resistance to Yazid, but they were not in favor of him going ahead to the point of dying. Notice the response Imam gives to all these three groups of people. As far as Abdullah bin Umar is concerned, history records that Imam alayhi salam mentioned three things to him. Ya Aba Abdurrahman. That was the kunya of Abdullah bin Umar. Ama alimta anna min hawani dunya ala Allah. أن رأس يحيى بن زكريا أهدي إلى بغي من بغايا بني إسرائيل. Abdullah bin Umar, you're asking me not to make opposition and uprising against Yazid. What for? What are you afraid of? Of this world? What is the value of this world? Don't you know the value of this world is so low that the head of John the Baptist, Yahya bin Zakariya, was chopped off and given as a gift to a prostitute from the prostitutes of Bani Israel? That's the value of this dunya. It seems Imam Hussein had analyzed the primary motive of people whose thinking was that represented by Abdullah bin Umar, who seemed to be attached to the world so much that though they realize something is wrong, they're not ready to rise up to it and stand against it. And this has been condemned in the Quran. In Surah Tawbah, chapter 9, ayah number 39, 38 and 39, Allah says, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا مَا لَكُمْ O believers, what is the problem with you? إِذَا قِيلَ لَكُمْ إِنْفِرُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ إِثَّاقَلْتُمْ إِلَى الْأَرْضِ When the time comes that you have to now contribute your wealth, no, you have to give up your life to uphold a higher cause, the cause of God. إِثَّاقَلْتُمْ إِلَى الْأَرْضِ You cling to the earth, your family, and your business, and your home, and your attachments. And the Quran answers that, أَرَضِيتُمْ بِالْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا مِنَ الْآخِرَةِ Don't you realize the pleasures of this world are insignificant compared to the pleasures of Akhirah? فَمَا مَتَاعُ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا فِي الْآخِرَةِ إِلَّا قَلِيلٌ Oh yes, you'll have pleasures here. But number one, they are in duration temporary, whereas that is everlasting. In diversity, there are very few. There, the multiplicity of the pleasures is unimaginable. The pleasures of the dunya, number three, in depth and intensity are very shallow and superficial. Whereas there, the pleasure is global and comprehensive and profound. Why do you give up something which is unimaginable for something which is so cheap? One. Two. Imam Hussein tells Abdullah bin Umar that أَمَا تَعْلَمْ أَنَّ بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ كَانُوا مَا بَيْنَ طُلُوعِ الْفَجْرِ إِلَى طُلُوعِ الشَّمْسِ يَقْتُلُونَ 70 نَبِيًّا ثُمَّ يَجْلِسُونَ فِي الْأَسْوَاقِ يبيعون ويشترون كأنهم لم يصنعوا شيئا. From between the rise of dawn to the rise of the sun in the morning, the Bani Israel used to kill so many prophets. And then they would go to their business and sell and buy as if they've done nothing. Business as usual. Don't you see the state of the ummah that it has deteriorated so low that the moral depravity now is so intense, there is simply no sense of moral outrage. Let me explain. There's a beautiful hadith which tells us the moral deterioration that an ummah can undergo. The Holy Prophet, may peace be upon him and on his progeny, is reported to have said on one occasion to his companions, كَيْفَ بِكُمْ إِذَا فَسَدَتْ نِسَاءُكُمْ وَفَسَقَ شَبَابُكُمْ وَلَمْ تَأْمُرُوا بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَلَمْ تَنْهَوْا عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ How will your status be in the future when you will come to a situation where your women will become corrupt, where your youth will become rebellious, and you shall not even be enjoining anything good, and you shall not be forbidding evil. You'll allow evil to go on, and you will not even instruct people to do something good, despite you seeing that. So the companions were shocked. Is this going to happen? أَيَكُونُ ذَٰلِكَ يَا رَسُولَ اللَّهِ And the Prophet said, Na'am, wa sharrun min thalik. Oh yes, it will happen. And this is bad enough. But worse than this, كَيْفَ بِكُمْ إِذَا أَمَرْتُمْ بِالْمُنْكَرِ وَنَهَيْتُمْ عَنِ الْمَعْرُوفِ. Worse than that situation where you don't even enjoin something good and you don't forbid evil, you will reach to a lower level where you will start enjoining evil, encouraging it, and you will be start dissuading and discouraging from goodness. أَيَكُونُ ذَٰلِكَ يَا رَسُولَ اللَّهِ. Is that going to be our situation in the future? And the Prophet said, نَعَمْ وَشَرٌ مِّن ذَٰلِكَ. It's not only going to be that bad that you will not instruct goodness and forbid evil. It's not going to be worse than that where you will be instructing evil and not and stopping from goodness. The worst situation. كَيْفَ بِكُمْ إِذَا رَأَيْتُمُ الْمَعْرُوفَ مُنْكَرًا وَالْمُنْكَرَ مَعْرُوفًا. Worse than that will be a situation where you will no longer see and perceive evil as evil. No, you will see evil as good. You will see good as evil. The situation, Abdullah bin Umar, in other words, Imam is trying to explain to him, that is how I understand this response to Imam Hussein, of Imam Hussein. Abdullah bin Umar, we are living in times where an evil tyrant has taken power, number one. He is openly committing evil acts. He is exploiting the people. He is using Baytul Mal for sins. And people know that? And they are silent? No, they are approving it? No, they see this as good. This is the worst level to which an ummah can fall down to. And you expect me to sit silent? The final parting response to Abdullah bin Umar. Ittaqillah, ya Aba Abdurrahman. Beware and fear God. وَلَا تَدَعُنَّ نُصْرَتِي. Don't abandon me and don't leave me alone. Support me, come along with me. Abdullah bin Umar was of a different mentality. Incidentally, he cries. He says, you're the grandson of the Prophet, but I can't come with you. Can you lift up your shirt? You know, I used to see the Prophet. There was a part of your body, he would embrace it and kiss it. I would like to kiss that portion. He cried and he kissed and he left Imam. Where did he go? The same Abdullah bin Umar was the one who refused to make bay'ah to Imam Ali alayhi salam. Abdullah ibn Umar, Malik ibn Ashraf told Imam Ali alayhi salam, you know why he is so bold as not to come and declare his allegiance to you? Because you seem to be a bit soft with him. Let us show him a little force. And Imam says, no, I will not use force to extract allegiance. If the end is good, the means cannot be evil. And he left him. Except that time when Abdullah bin Umar was reported to be now conspiring to make an uprising against Imam Ali's government. At that time he went and intercepted him. But till the end he didn't make bay'ah to Imam Ali alayhi salam. And Imam left him. When Muawiyah came to power, he made the bay'ah to Muawiyah. When Yazid came to power, initially he showed opposition. But in his opposition to Yazid, he tried to weaken the movement of Imam Hussein. When Imam Hussein said, no, I will not be influenced, I've got my strong logic. This ummah is reached a point of moral death. This ummah needs to be reformed. This ummah needs to be restored back to the lifestyle of the Prophet and Imam Ali. This ummah needs to be instructed in what is good and what is evil. And even if I have to die, I will do it. He went back to Medina and wrote a letter of allegiance to Yazid. And after Yazid, amazing, when Hajjaj bin Yusuf Thaqafi came to power in the time of Abdul Malik bin Marwan, and Hajjaj came to Medina, Umar ibn Abdullah went to him at night time and he said, I've come to declare my allegiance. And Hajjaj says, but why can't you wait till tomorrow? He says, well, I've heard the Prophet, and the Prophet has said, Man mata walam ya'rif imam zamanihi, faqad mata mitatan jahiliyyah. Whosoever dies and doesn't know who the right leader is, he has died a death of jahiliyyah. Hajjaj says, oh well, now that you're so hasty and so eager to declare your allegiance, I'm so tired, I'm stretching out my foot, just kiss it. Imam warned him, if you refuse to support the cause of truth, God is going to punish you with humiliation. So that was one response at the time of Imam Hussein. Respectable, apparently respectable people, refusing to undertake an opposition. Contrast number two, Abdullah bin Zubair. He comes and meets Imam in Makkah. You have got support in Kufa, I'm paraphrasing. If I were you, I would proceed to Kufa. But then, people in Kufa may not be so reliable. And if you leave Makkah, Makkah is a center, and we would get more supporters here. Imam Hussein alayhi salam responds to Abdullah bin Zubair by saying that, number one, وَأَيْمُ اللَّهِ لَوْ كُنْتُ فِي جُحْرٍ فِي جُحْرِ هَامَّةٍ مِنْ هَذِهِ الْهَوَامَّ لَاسْتَخْرَجُونِي. I'm absolutely sure that this evil empire is so bent upon extracting surrender from me that wherever I go, even if I were to hide in a snake hole, they would fish me out. Death is definite. I know it, number one. Number two, however, where to die, I will choose. Definitely not in Makkah. You know why? Inna abi haddathani anna bi makkata kabshan bihi tustahallu hurmatuha. My father predicted long time ago that in Makkah there will be a ram who shall be slaughtered, and thereby the sanctity of the Kaaba and the Makkah will be defiled and polluted. فَمَا أُحِبُّ أَنْ أَكُونَ ذَٰلِكَ الْكَبْشِ. I don't want to become that ram. Indirectly, he was telling Abdullah bin Zubair, you probably will become that ram. Abdullah bin Zubair stayed in Makkah. Yazid, in the year 62, sent an army to Makkah to extract forcibly allegiance from Abdullah bin Zubair. He took protection in the Kaaba. Fire was thrown over the Kaaba. Kaaba was damaged. But during that siege, Yazid died, and therefore the siege was lifted and Abdullah bin Zubair survived. But 10 years later, Hajjaj defeated him, destroyed the Kaaba in the process. Blood was shed in the sanctity of the Kaaba. And then Hajjaj came to Medina where Abdullah ibn Umar presented his allegiance. So in other words, Abdullah bin Zubair was being told, listen, we both are opposing Yazid, but we can't have two leaders. If at all, you have to come under my leadership. Otherwise, your path is wrong. You're going to cause bloodshed in the Kaaba, whereas I'm going to protect the Kaaba. You're going to use Kaaba to protect yourself. I'm going to use myself to protect the Kaaba. And then he warned him, Wallahi, لَيَعْتَدُنَّ عَلَيَّ كَمَ اَعْتَدَتِ الْيَهُودُ فِي السَّبْتِ. These people, this ummah, is going to transgress and break all laws in persecution, in oppression, in killing me, just like that small group of the Yahud did in the case of the Sabbath. The case of the Sabbath, very briefly, is mentioned in Surah A'raf, chapter 7, ayah number 163 onwards. He says, do you remember the case of those people who lived on the waterfront and they were told on the day of Sabbath not to fish, and that was a test for them? And يَوْمَ سَبْتِهِمْ حِيْتَانُهُمْ كَانَ تَأْتِيهِمْ وَيَوْمَ لَا يَسْبِتُونَ لَا تَأْتِيهِمْ. And God, out of His test, used to send the fish on Saturday, when they were on holiday, and when Sunday or the other working days came and they were fishermen, that was the main livelihood, the fish wouldn't come. So they disobeyed the law of God. Either they openly fished on Saturday, or no, they used a legal loophole whereby they would throw their nets on Saturday but remove it on Sunday, or they created pools with gates, and the gates were kept open, so on Saturday the fish would come in, then they would close it, they wouldn't fish, and when Sunday comes they start fishing. But they transgressed openly the laws of God. And in this community of theirs, there were three groups. There were these sinners, one. And there were those who were silent. They used to see this, and they were silent. And then there was a third group who said, no, how can you openly break the law of God? We can't tolerate that. And they said, we have to admonish you, and we have to prevent you from committing this evil act. Why? For two reasons. Number one, it is our duty. And number two, there's a possibility. When they were questioned, why do you take a stand against these sinners and evildoers? They said, because it is our duty to God, and God's laws have to be respected, and they're breaking the laws of God, we shall warn them. Number one. Number two, there is a possibility that some of these souls who are dead will wake up. It's our duty to try. And then God's punishment came and destroyed the sinners. Imam Hussein invokes this example as if to indicate that if nothing else, it is my duty in this ummah that these people who are sinners and openly break the laws of God, I cannot sit silent. I must oppose. If nothing else, to discharge my duty to God. مَعْذِرَةً إِلَىٰ رَبِّكُمْ وَلَعَلَّهُمْ يَتَّقُونَ. Or they change their ways. And finally was Abdullah bin Ja'far. He tried to bring immunity for Imam. Don't go to Kufa. I will get you protection from the rulers. And Imam refuses that protection. He says, فَخَيْرُ الْأَمَانِ أَمَانُ اللَّهِ. The best protection I seek is not my physical bodily protection. This is what the rulers will give me. This is what this letter of immunity will give me. But what I'm afraid is the punishment of God on the day of judgment for sitting silent when this ummah was dipping down into depravity and deterioration and I kept silent. Abdullah bin Ja'far did not come to Karbala. He was around 70 years old at that time. Perhaps he was disabled. Perhaps he was blind. We don't know the exact cause. But definitely he was exempted. If he was blind, وَلَيْسَ عَلَى الْأَعْمَى حَرَجٍ. There is no problem if a blind person doesn't come to jihad. But his two sons came. Aun bin Abdullah bin Ja'far and Muhammad bin Abdullah bin Ja'far. We don't have much details about Abdullah bin Ja'far. But what Aun and Muhammad did on the battlefield represented Abdullah bin Ja'far. Abdullah bin Ja'far died 20 years after Karbala at the age of 90. Aun, when he goes to the battlefield, he declares, إِن تُنْكِرُونِي فَأَنَا بْنُ جَعْفَرِي شَهِيدِ صِدْقٍ فِي الْجِنَانِ أَزْهَرِي يَطِيرُ بِجَنَاحٍ أَخْبَرِي كَفَى بِهَذَا شَرَفًا فِي الْمَحْشَرِ. If you don't know who I am, let me tell you, I'm proud of my grandfather, Ja'far, who died in Muta. And his right hand was chopped off and his left hand was chopped off. And God substituted that with two wings, the degrees of perfection in paradise. And I'm following the same path. Muhammad bin Abdullah bin Ja'far, when he came to the battlefield, look at his battle cry. نَشْكُوا إِلَى اللَّهِ مِنَ الْعُدْوَانِ قِتَالَ قَوْمٍ فِي الرِّدَى عُمْيَانِ قَدْ تَرَكُوا مَعَالِمَ الْقُرْآنِ وَمُحْكَمَ التَّنْزِيلِ وَالتِّبْيَانِ وَأَذْهَرُ الْكُفْرَ مَعَ التُّغْيَانِ. You know why I stand here before you? Four reasons. Number one, you have rejected the truth. You are kafir. You are sinners and disobey the laws of God. No, you have rejected the Quran. Therefore you have become blind. We are sure you are destroyed inside and your punishment awaits you. And we are so determined that we will die defending this man. Observe contrast to Abdullah bin Umar and Abdullah bin Zubair. clarity of vision, commitment to the truth, courage to die till death defending the truth. As-salamu alayk. Ya Aba Abdullah, wa ala al-arwah allati hallat bifinaik, wa anakhat birahlik, alaykum minna jami'an salamullah abadan ma baqina, wa baqiya al-laylu wa al-nahar. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi.